This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. So the Prime Minister of Great Britain, or is it the United Kingdom?
UK.
Why is this so complicated?
There's a lot of versions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just England anymore.
Well, the UK.
Well,
is...
England is part of the UK.
Yeah, right.
Ah.
UK. You got it.
Is that what they say in Iceland? Ah.
Ah, you just got to go there.
Like, isn't Great Britain over?
He's the prime minister, and he's here with Donald Trump, and they're sitting and they're talking. And I know that there was a letter that was presented to Donald Trump signed by the king. We signed a letter and sent it to the king once. Anyway, that's different. Let's listen in to this conversation going back and forth because they're having a chat about the ending of the war in Ukraine. Let's listen in.
Tate landed in Florida today on a private jet after being released from custody in Romania. They are accused rapists, human traffickers, not thought of as good people in many circles. Did your administration pressure the Romanian government to release them? And if so, why?
I know nothing about that. I don't know. You're saying he's on a plane right now?
He's back. They already made.
Yeah, I just know nothing about it. We'll check it out. We'll let you know.
Obviously, this involves, there's an English element here, so obviously it's important that justice is done, and human trafficking is obviously, to my mind, a security risk. And so I will catch up with the story in due course.
You're aware. Are you aware? I didn't know anything about it. Yeah.
Mr. President, veterans make up 30% of the federal workforce. Are you tracking how many veterans have been fired so far?
Yes, we are. We are, and we take good care of our veterans, so we're watching that very carefully, and we hope it's going to be as small a number as possible. But we are having great success in slimming down our government. It's been really very successful, and some took payouts and buyouts, and others took other things, and some people we're finding out don't even exist. We're finding that we have a lot of people that don't exist, that people thought that did. We will be making a statement on that, but we're taking care of our veterans. We love our veterans. We're going to take good care of them.
Mr. President, could you be persuaded as part of a peace settlement in Ukraine to provide air cover, a backstop security position to the contributions that Europe might make as well?
Well, so President Zelensky is coming to see me on Friday morning, and we're going to be signing really a very important agreement for both sides because it's really going to get us into that country. We'll be working there. We'll have a lot of people working there. And so in that sense, it's very good. It's a backstop, you could say. I don't think anybody's going to play around if we're there with a lot of workers and having to do with rare earths and other things, which we need for our country.
and we appreciate it very much. And I look forward to seeing him. We'll be talking about it, and we'll also be talking about that today with the Prime Minister.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we've already indicated that we'll play our full part in making sure that any deal, if there is one, and I hope there is, and I think this is a historic moment to make sure it's a lasting deal, and we're about to have a discussion about how we can make that work.
But I have to say this, as I said yesterday, you know, you're talking about a peacekeeping force. We have to make a deal first. Right now, we don't have a deal. We have Russia. We have Ukraine. I think we're very well advanced. I think Russia has been acting very well. We have representatives, Steve Witkoff and Scott and Marco and JD. We're all involved, every one of us, and a lot more. But I think we're very well advanced on a deal, but we have not made a deal yet. So I don't like to talk about peacekeeping until we have a deal. I like to get things done. I don't want to give it the bad luck sign. We don't want to do that. But we've had very good talks with Russia, and we've had very good talks, as you know, with Ukraine. Yes, sir.
Mr. President, does the Prime Minister have to choose a closer relationship with the EU as he is seeking and a good trade relationship with you? Which one would you go for?
Well, I think we have just a great relationship. We actually had a good relationship before. We've met a couple of times, and I'm very impressed with him. I'm very impressed with his wife, I must say. She's a beautiful, great woman. And I said, you're very lucky. He's very lucky. And we've had a very good relationship.
He's worried about Britain potentially undoing some of the benefits of Brexit by seeking a closer tie with the EU, who you said was set up to screw
him. No, I don't worry about that. I thought, you know, frankly, what they did was the right thing at the time. And I think that'll probably prove out over the centuries. You have a long time to go. But I think I predicted that was going to happen, and it did happen, and it'll work itself out. I think it's already worked itself out.
Yes. Mr. President, can I ask on Chagos, Mr. President? Keir Starmer has signed the deal to give away the Chagos Islands to Mauritius. Will you approve that deal?
Well, we're going to have some discussions about that very soon, and I have a feeling it's going to work out very well. They're talking about a very long-term, powerful lease, a very strong lease, about 140 years, actually. That's a long time. And I think we'll be inclined to go along with your country. Yeah, I think it's a little bit early. We have to be given the details, but it doesn't sound bad. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, you obviously can do business with our Prime Minister, Keir Starmer. You said yesterday that the EU was constructed to screw the US when it comes to trade. What can our Prime Minister say to you to persuade you not to impose tariffs on the United Kingdom?
Yeah, did I use the word that you said, that bad word?
I think so. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that the EU, I've had problems with the EU because, and we're not talking about, we happen to have a great relationship with you, but we did have, and we do have problems with the EU because they've tariffed us. They do it in the form of a VAT tax, which is about 20%, and many other taxes. They sue our companies. They sued Apple, got $16 or $17 billion, which was, I think, totally a ridiculous decision. And they're suing Google for a lot of money. They're suing a lot of other companies. And we don't like the way they're treating our people now. We don't like the way they're treating our companies. They sell us cars. We don't sell them cars. They don't take our cars. They don't take much of our agriculture. And we have a deficit with them of about $350 billion. So I wouldn't say it's been such a great relationship personally, but other people did because it's politically correct to say that it's been good, but it hasn't been good. And we're going to change that. And we are going to have reciprocal tariffs. We're not going to have tariffs. We're going to have reciprocal. Whatever they charge us, we're going to charge them, which for many years, foolishly, I would have done that. But then all of a sudden we had COVID and we had other things to think about. So it took me a little while to get that on. But we had, in my first 4 years, we had the greatest economy in the history of, I think, the world, but certainly in the history of our country. I think we're going to have that again. But the EU was very, very tough on us from the standpoint of trade. Then you could take it a step further and go into NATO. And that was a very tough situation for us. I mean, that's been a very tough situation because we were paying a disproportionate share. And it wasn't good. So, as you know, they paid hundreds of billions of dollars after I got involved. And they evened it out a little bit, but not very much. And then if you look at the war, We're in for $300 billion plus, and they're in for $100 billion. They get their money back, and now we'll get our money back also. But under Biden, you wouldn't have done that. Biden did a terrible job, I have to say. I hate to say that about somebody that sat here just before me, but he did a terrible, terrible job. That war should have never happened, the war between Russia and Ukraine. Frankly, October 7th should have never happened. Israel, that should have never happened. What happened there should have never. Inflation should have never happened. Afghanistan should have never happened. The way they got out, not getting out, but the way they got out. So, but I can say that as far as we're here for a different reason, we're talking about a very different place. And this is some place that I have investments there. I own Turnberry, I own Aberdeen, and I own a great place called Doonbeg in Ireland. So, you know, I have a great warm spot for your country.
And our trade, obviously, is fair and balanced, and in fact, you've got a bit of a surplus, so we're in a different position there. And obviously, we've contributed hugely in relation to Ukraine, and taken together with Europe, there's about 50%
it'll work,
still
yeah.
in.
It'll work.
It's
going to
work.
Thank you. So does that mean there won't be any sanctions on the UK then?
Well, I have to take a look. I mean, we're going to have a good discussion today, and we have some very talented people on the other side, and we have some people that probably aren't as talented as them, but they're pretty good. Marco, what do you think? Our people are pretty good. And no, we're going to have a good discussion, and we'll be talking about
it. Mr.
Starmer, the Prime Minister, has said that he believes that Vladimir Putin would be at risk of invading Ukraine again without a sufficient backstop. Do you think that Vladimir Putin would be likely to invade again in the event of a peace deal?
I don't think so. I think when we have a deal, it's going to be the deal. I don't think if I didn't win the election, I don't think we'd be even talking to Putin right now or anybody else. I think it would just, you know, I don't know if you're looking at the stats, but thousands of people are being killed a week, soldiers mostly, because the towns have been destroyed. But thousands of soldiers. This was a very bad week, by the way. I get the stats.
Terrible numbers.
And you're talking about a human life. Number one, I want to see that. And it doesn't involve American soldiers, but it's Russian and Ukrainian soldiers. And I think I'm speaking for both.
Yeah.
Number one, we want to see that stop. And number two, I want to stop paying the kind of money that we're talking about. You know, we're helping NATO, but we're helping a lot, more than anybody else by far. And I want that to stop also.
Mr. President,
thank you, sir. You talked about trade tariffs this morning on your social media side. Just a question about China. 10% tariffs has already been implemented on China. Are you planning to do
an additional 10 above the
This
10.
Will be an additional 10 above. And is there, from the talks with Canada and Mexico so far, are you not seeing the progress that you wanted in order to
extend
that?
I don't see it at all. No, not on drugs. We've done a great job. If you look at Tom Homan, he's been incredible, and Christie, they've done a great job in terms of the border. But the drugs continue to pour into our country, killing hundreds of thousands of people. We're losing substantially more than 100,000 people. I mean, dead. They're dead. The families are destroyed after that happens. So it's, you know, it's not just that. That's the ultimate. But the families are absolutely destroyed. The drugs come in through Mexico. They come, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them come from China. And that's why we did that. It's 10 plus 10.
In 10 case, plus 10
was there confusion on that?
There was, sir, yeah.
Okay. 10 plus 10. It's a second 10. And I think you'll... I think you're going to see eventually you're going to see drugs stopping, because the country should not be allowing those drugs to come into the United States of America. And we're not going to allow it to happen. So that goes on the 4th of March. And then on the 2nd of April, we have reciprocal tariffs. That's reciprocal, where we charge countries what they're charging us. And nobody should have a problem with that. We have reciprocal. It's reciprocity. It's something that I think... everybody I've spoken to said that's fair, and it is. If somebody charges us 25%, we charge them 25. If somebody charges us 10 or 15 or 30 or 70, we charge them an exact like amount. And it's pretty simple, but it's reciprocal tariffs, because the United States has been taken advantage of by many, many different countries, including our friends, friend and foe. And in many cases, our friends took bigger advantage of. When you talk about the EU, we're talking about the EU. The EU has been really a very bad to us in terms of trade. And I'm a different kind of a president. I can't let that happen. Thank you. Please, ma'am, go ahead.
Mr. President, what would you be willing to do if Vladimir Putin did not stick to the terms of any deal on Ukraine?
If he not what?
If he did not stick to the terms of any deal on Ukraine, because he has a history of not sticking to his word when it comes to international agreements.
I think he'll keep his word. I think he's. I've spoken to him. I've known him for a long time now. You know, I've known him. We had to go through the Russian hoax together. That was not a good thing. It's not fair. That was a rigged deal. And had nothing to do with Russia. It was a rigged deal with inside the country. And they had to put up with that, too. They put up with a lot. It wasn't just us. They had to put up with it, with a phony story that was made up. I've known him for a long time now, and I think he will. I don't believe he's going to violate his word. I don't think he'll be back. When we make a deal, I think the deal's going to hold. Now, they're going to have security. You're going to have security. Yep. You're going to have soldiers. I know France wants to be there. He's... The president has said he wants to have soldiers there. I don't think we're going to even be necessary, but I don't think there'll be any problem with keeping the deal with the security. You want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, the deal, if we get it, is going to be hugely important. I don't think it would have happened if the space hadn't been created for it by yourself. But if there's a deal in, we've got to make sure it's a deal that lasts, that is not temporary, that lasts, and that's why we need to make sure that it's secure, and we've lent in and said we'll play our part, and we've talked and we will talk about how we work with yourself, Mr. President, to ensure that this deal is something which is not violated, because it's very important that if there is a deal, we keep it.
And that will be, and I think I can say that will be the easy part. That's the part we look forward to, because putting security there, that's the part we all look forward to. That's easy. The difficult part is getting the deal made. So, yeah. But I think we've come a long way. Did you have something?
Yeah, on the personal level.
He's got such a nice face.
Oh.
No, he's smiling. But watch, he'll ask a total killer question.
Those are the ones, I've known him a long time.
Yeah, the ones that get you. No, he looks like a nice guy.
On a personal level, Mr. President, what do you get on most? What's your common ground with Sir Keir Starmer? Because you're both from different political backgrounds.
It's true. I think... I can say this because we've known each other now really for a little while. This is not our first meeting, as you know. He loves his country, and so do I. That's our common theme. He loves his country, and I love our country. And we also have two countries that have gotten along for the longest period of time.
Yeah.
Number one ally on each side. And we have good. France and Australia. We have a lot of good ones. But we've had a long time relationship. A long time, hundreds of years, and we like each other, frankly, and we like each other's country, and we love our country. And I think that's our common thread.
Donald Trump speaking from the White House with the Prime Minister, the British Prime Minister Starmer there, and kind of a love fest. One of the things that we just heard the Prime Minister say is this deal would not have been happening if you wouldn't have made the space for it, Mr. Trump. That is credit where credit is due. And if this war ends up being resolved this quickly in the first 6 months of Donald Trump's first year of his second term, pretty impressive, if you ask me. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Corey DeAngelis is going to join us. We've talked to him many times about the education system. And as you know, we are waiting on the confirmation. We don't have a confirmation yet on the Secretary of Education, do we? I don't think we do. McMahon, she has been nominated for this position. And a lot of the people talking about the Department of Education say we should get rid of it. Now, of course, there's a lot of people who are going to advocate against that. It's a discussion that needs to be had. And if we're able to listen to those people and they make a solid case for keeping the Department of Education as a way to enrich and educate the children of our country, let's hear the conversation. We're going to throw at Corey DeAngelis when we come back some of those things that are being shared quite a bit from the education community on why the Department of Education should stay. Corey DeAngelis next.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Big Time Rush, performing live in concert, playing every song from every episode and more. Big Time Rush with special guests Caitlin Tarver and Stephen Kramer Glickman. Get tickets now at LiveNation.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
At the end of the day, to me, if we don't make these dollars competitive, right? And I've heard, you know, I got sued by teachers' unions over this and everything else. And every time they complained and were screaming about this, it was always about what it was doing to them. And no one was talking about what it's doing to the kids. And they don't have their own union, just to be clear. So we need to have national school choice in this country. There's got to be access for everybody, no matter what, and everybody can access these funds.
So Congressman Riley Moore of West Virginia pushing for school choice right now, I think, is a very important thing to be discussing. And we're gonna talk with our next guest here about the Secretary of Education, Donald Trump's pick, Linda McMahon. And we're in a place right now where we're seeing transformation in the way the United States government functions, in the way we respect the taxpayer dollar, the way we give government back to the people. I don't know why we would expect anything less from our education system under this new administration, which is why we bring our friend Corey DeAngelis back on the show, senior fellow at the American Culture Project, adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, and executive director at the Educational Freedom Institute. Corey, welcome back to the show. I love having these conversations with you. I'm very passionate about it, but I don't know anybody who's more passionate about it than you are, Corey.
Hey, Annie, thanks for having me.
You know, I reached out to you and I'd seen something that had been shared online. And I thought, you know what, I want to go straight to Corey with this. And having looked at it, I saw it had been shared 229,000 times on Facebook, 4,000 comments, 7,000 reactions. And it was just basically, I'm just going to read it to you, Corey, and we're going to go through this. And you're going to tell me whether this person has a point when it comes to the Department of Education or whether or not this is misguided. And it says, for all of you applauding President Trump and Elon Musk for tearing down the Department of Education, y'all need to go back to school or even do a simple search on the old interwebs because you have zero clue what the Department of Education actually does. And I really hope none of you have kids with IEPs or 504 plans, because you're about to find out the really hard way just how much this department does to protect their education. Now, the first thing it lists as a reality check on what the Department of Education actually does is it said it protects students with disabilities, enforces IEPs, which is an individual education program, and 504 plans under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. That's IDEA, IDEA, and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. Without this, schools would refuse accommodations to kids who seek them. Corey, I hear this the most. If we get rid of the Department of Education, what happens to these students with disabilities?
I mean, the person who posted this, I hope those 7,000 reacts are all laugh emojis, because they don't know what they're talking about. And for them to scold the rest of us and act like they're so much more intelligent than the rest of the population who wants to abolish the department when they haven't even read the bill themselves is beyond parody. But if they were to read the bill, they'd understand that. And the bill's by Senator Mike Rounds, a Republican out of South Dakota. It's called Returning Education to the States Act. It doesn't really change a lot of these things that are listed in this post, but it does block grant the money back to the states based on the amount of students that you have in your particular state. So on the question of students with special needs, all of those programs would move under the Department of Health and Human Services. So that doesn't just go away. None of this funding goes away. If anything, it provides more education funding because you're wasting less of it on useless bureaucrats in D.C. thousands of miles away. They currently employ about 4,400 useless bureaucrats in D.C. under the Department of Education. That funding would go back to the states through the Department of Treasury in the form of block grants. So I live in Texas, for example. We have 10% of the nation's K-12 kids. We'd get about 10% of the funding. And so you'd have more local control. That funding would go back to the states to spend on education as they see fit. So a lot of these points that are in the post, you know, civil rights protections for students, that moves under the Department of Justice. If you're really concerned about Pell Grants for college or student loans, that moves under the Department of Treasury as well. We can talk separately, Annie, about whether we should have the federal government involved in the student loan business. I don't think they should be. Mm-hmm. But the specific bill that's on the table that has any legitimate chance of passing that people are rallying behind is this one from Mike Rounds, which literally sends education back to the states. So and any useful programs that are currently under the Department of Education would move elsewhere.
So the vacating of the Department of Education at a federal level, there's a plan and process for these IEPs, the 504s, the IDEA or the IDEA Act or whatever it is. There's the other points here, and you kind of address some of these.
By the way, sure. Does that currently lead to great academic and other outcomes for kids with special needs? No, it's a form of box checking currently. So we should look into that to make them even better. But just because you're in a school that's regulated by the federal government right now that says you have to do a good job for kids with special needs, they're not doing that right now. And so we should make sure we look at the implementation of these programs as they currently are, as opposed to this perfect idea of how they ought to work. They don't really work out in practice as well as the defenders of the status quo would like you to believe. But the reality is these would move under the Department of Health and Human Services.
We're speaking with Corey DeAngelis, a fierce fighter for school choice and for better outcomes, successful outcomes for our students in an education system right now that's failing them. One of the things that the consistent threads that I noticed in this post, just the short versions of the bullet points, are ensures equal access to education and talks about enforcing Title IX. It goes on to talk about providing federal education funding, sending billions to public schools, Title I schools, which are low-income students, special education programs, Pell Grants for college students, which you addressed, overseas federal student loans. That system's just fantastic. Holds schools accountable. Now, that one caught my eye, and I'm like, that's a good thing. Hold schools accountable, because we have a suffering education system. Our students are not performing the way they should. Hold schools accountable. And then when I read the description here from this Kim Dixon post on Facebook that's been shared 229,000 times, this is what they want to attach to holding schools accountable. Investigates discrimination, ensures civil rights laws are followed, and prevents fraud in higher education. Where are the results of the education, the failing schools? What about holding those schools accountable?
They're not holding anything accountable. And if you look at the Department of Education, it started in 1979 as a payoff by Jimmy Carter to the teachers union. He wanted the NEA's endorsement. And it was created in part, one of their goals was to eliminate achievement gaps. Has that happened? No, they've gotten worse. Academic outcomes haven't gotten better. They've actually declined. And we've spent about $2 trillion since the inception at the federal level alone. And that doesn't even get into the point that this federal department is unconstitutional. The word education is not in the U.S. Constitution. It's therefore a violation of the 10th Amendment. And all of these things that, you know, are theorized that this department's supposed to do, like hold schools accountable. We already have departments of education in every single state. They can hold their schools accountable better than the federal government. And if you look at even the things that Trump's trying to do with his executive orders, like banning indoctrination in schools, I think that's a step in the right direction. But you can tell that they don't have any intention on listening to Trump. And maybe he wins this battle in the end, but it might take a long time. And it's very difficult from the federal level, these things that go on behind closed doors. Here's an example. I live in Texas, and we actually have things going on pretty well when it comes to our state government. And we banned DEI, and we banned critical race theory in public schools. Guess what? They're still doing it. And we've caught them on camera. Accuracy in Media is an organization that does undercover journalism. And we went into public schools talking to their administrators all across the state. And we asked, are you going to listen to Abbott's order to, you know, to not teach CRT? And they'll say, oh, no, we're just going to don't worry about it. We'll just move the goalpost. We'll call it social emotional learning. And we're going to, at the end of the day, the teachers are going to do what they want. That's why I think school choice is so important. We should try to tweak the system from the top down and do what we can to make things better. But the ultimate form of accountability is from the bottom up. People need to be able to vote with their feet so that when they go to the school board and they complain, they won't get their mic cut off anymore. They won't be called a domestic terrorist anymore. They won't be labeled as an evil person just being a parent who cares about their kids. They'll actually have a school board that says, hold up, I should listen to this person because they can actually do something about it now. They have the power to vote with their feet.
Yeah, I'm always amused at the fact that, like, if school choice exists, people could still choose the public education system. It's not like that becomes a non-factor for our society to be able to invest in what they've got right now. They could continue to choose it, and you would think it would be better.
If you like your public school, you can keep your public school.
Yes. Amen.
For real this time, unlike with your doctor and Obama's lies.
You know, and you talk about
public schools actually do get better, too, with competition.
Exactly. They'd have an incentive to. You talk about, bringing that education system even more local, because the things that this post is saying that the Department of Education provides would go to other departments and back to the states. That makes it more local, and you're saying the states can hold the education system more accountable. But, you know, the natural part of what you're saying is that constituents, taxpayers, parents in those states can hold their state representatives more accountable quicker than they can potentially hold the Department of Education, a federal entity, accountable for failing schools.
Yeah, exactly. The most local form of accountability is foot voting. The family unit is the most local level of control that we have, the most local level of governance that we have, and the best form, because they know their kids best. They have the best incentive to get the decisions right about their kids' education. And it works like this in every other industry too. Mm-hmm. If we don't like what we're getting with higher education or pre-K, we can vote with our feet somewhere else. We don't like the grocery store we're at, we can go somewhere else. We don't have to go argue to a grocery store board as to why they should listen to us. By the way, they would just say they'd have empty shelves, and they'd tell us, well, just give us more money and we'll do better, and then nothing would ever change. And that's what we have with the public school system.
Amen to that. We're speaking with Corey DeAngelis. I want to shift to the other half of this post. Like I said, 229,000 shares on Facebook. So once it gets put into like the union groups, then they all share it, and then it gets out there, and then people are like, well, this kind of makes a good point, but it's not really well informed. When you and I discussed this before and I read this part, I told you this post is actually making me more in favor of getting rid of the Department of Education, because it says, I'm going to read to you just briefly here, what does the Department of Education not do? So this post, an advocate for keeping the Department of Education, wants to highlight some of the things that might be misconceptions about what the Department of Education does. They say it doesn't do this. It says it does not control what your kids learn. State and local school boards decide curriculum, textbooks, and what's taught in history or science class. Doesn't enforce any particular agenda spend on schools. So I'm thinking, okay, well, we don't need the Department of Education for that purpose. Does not run public schools. They're managed by the states and local districts. So if they're doing that already, why do we need the Department of Education?
Exactly.
Does not hire or fire teachers. Does not mandate Common Core. Does not regulate private schools. And does not set tuition prices for college. Public universities are funded by state governments and they set their own tuition. So at the end of this post,
okay,
I'm thinking to myself,
so what's the big deal? What's so wrong with getting rid of it?
Why do we need it? I mean, what do you say to those points, these people? And, you know, Corey, you and I both know there's a lot of good people who are in the education system who are being fed things repeatedly and they don't quite understand how scary it wouldn't be if the Department of Education.
It's like they set up an entire form of a straw man argument to try to argue why we shouldn't abolish it. But no one's really, you know, debating these issues when they're talking about abolishing the department. They're talking about constitutionality. They're talking about they're talking about moving these functions to other areas. Anybody that's serious that's talking about eliminating the department. And hopefully Linda McMahon gets confirmed on the floor. I think she will. She passed out a committee. I think it was like a 15 to 14 vote. All the Republicans voted in favor. I expect they'll do the same thing in the Senate floor vote. So hopefully she gets in there and body slams that unconstitutional department once and for all.
Yeah.
There is a problem with having to overcome a filibuster in the Senate. So hopefully if she can't kill it altogether, she can give it death by a thousand cuts by trying to reduce the influence of the Department of Education. But you're right. If they aren't doing a lot already, what's the big deal? Why are they pulling their? It's all because it's Trump derangement syndrome on the left. They know Trump wants to do this. They know Republicans are in control, and all they can do is flail their arms and fearmonger and attack anything that's a good idea from the right. But the thing is, they create this basically a straw man, this thing that they're not actually arguing for to fight against because they can't fight against the actual policy. Look at the bill, Returning Education to the States Act. It's not that crazy. It's not crazy at all. What's crazy is that we funnel billions of dollars to this federal department, which funds DEI programs in some cases, and doesn't really educate a single kid. What's crazy is that we don't give the money back to the states. So it's not as seismic of a shift as the left wants you to think. And in fact, you know, Randy Weingarten, I'm sure people on this show know Randy Weingarten as the least liked union boss in our country's history. She's the teachers union president who lobbied the CDC to make it more difficult to reopen schools. She was just on MSNBC recently, basically saying that the federal government shouldn't run our schools. States and localities should run the schools. And it's like, oh, well, you're making an argument for abolishing the department. And when pressed on the issue of abolishing the department, she said something along the lines of her members, quote unquote, don't really care whether there's a federal department or not. Okay, if you don't really care, then if Randy's not even concerned about it, maybe it's not that big of a deal. She went on to say, they're just concerned about the money. They really just want to make sure the money's still there. Okay, well, that's what the bill does. It sends the money back to the states. You'll have more money for K-12 education since you're not wasting it in D.C.
Yeah.
So I think maybe we can get some Democrats to vote for it, but I don't know because of the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah. Corey DeAngelis, we appreciate you. I mean, I'll tell you this. When I'm looking through these very viral things, Facebook is usually the right platform where the majority of these things are being shared. They don't really talk about the kids, and they don't really talk about the standards of education. It's really more about preserving the status quo. And I think to me, that is the biggest indicator as to let's totally remake this system and start with the kids and start with the education, pay great teachers, great salaries, get rid of the bad ones and go from there. And Corey, you're a leader on this. So we always love having your voice.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I will say Idaho just signed a universal school choice bill, becoming state number 14. My home state of Texas has 76 co-sponsors on our House bill to go all in too. So the red states are doing the right thing to empower parents. Blue states need to get along with the program too.
Yeah, I would second that. Corey DeAngelis, thank you for being here. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's a really interesting conversation. You know, I see that post. When I saw that post on there, I was like, gosh, I'm going to have Corey. I had a private conversation with him on Twitter. And I was like, what do you think of this? Is this crazy? And then when I got through the whole thing reading it myself, I'm like, they just convinced me that we don't need the Department of Education because you're telling me all the things they don't do. Done. Deal. Let's go. get rid of it, fund it at the state level, and then we can locally on a state level change out our politicians who are investing more in themselves and the structure and the system, the bureaucracy that exists to uphold people in positions that aren't making our kids learn what they need to do and read at the proper grade level and do math so that they can be independent, self-sufficient citizens one day. That's what it should be all about. If the bottom line isn't that, then we need a new bottom line. Great to speak with Corey DeAngelis and get some thoughts on that very viral post. Quick break when we come back. We've got a Newsweek article out on Jeffrey Epstein. What does it say? Don't go away. We'll tell you when we come back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Newsweek's out with an article on the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. And I'll just read to you a little bit from here. Newsweek, I'm going to give you the author so that we're doing it the right way. Sean O'Driscoll with Newsweek. He is a senior crime and courts reporter based in Ireland. Sean O'Driscoll.
He's got the news first, huh?
And he's Sean, S-E-A-N. That's the appropriate.
Oh, if he's in
Irish.
Ireland, yeah, it's Sean. S-E-A-N.
What to know? Epstein was known to entertain famous people on his island, Little St. James, in the U.S. Virgin Islands. He would often fly people to the island on his private jet, leaving a written record of who traveled there. 90 names have been unsealed from a lawsuit filed by Virginia. Is it Guffrey or Jeffrey or what is it?
I've always said Goffrey, actually.
Guffrey.
Guffrey. There's another one.
G. Virginia G., an alleged trafficking victim against British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell.
Ghislaine.
Ghislaine. I've heard it both.
That one I do know. Well, okay, never mind. Maybe I don't.
I've heard it that way. Ghislaine
actually,
and Ghislaine.
I've heard it Ghislaine too.
Correct.
Never mind.
Why couldn't these people be named Sally?
Yeah.
Sally Jones. Sally. Epstein's former girlfriend, that's Ghislaine or whatever. Maxwell, 61, is serving a 20-year prison sentence. She's still alive in jail. A lot of people wondered if she would not kill herself also after she was convicted in December 2021. She's been there for a minute. Of helping Epstein recruit and sexually abuse underage girls. Financier Epstein, who was accused of preying on underage girls as young as 14, took his own life at the age of 66 in a jail cell at New York's Metropolitan Correctional Center in August 2019, before he could stand trial in Manhattan on sex trafficking charges. Authorities determined he hanged himself. He always denied any wrongdoing. At the time, he was already a convicted sex offender after being found guilty of a Florida state court in 2008 of one count of soliciting prostitution and one count of soliciting prostitution from a minor. Names appearing in the flight logs released in January 2024 are no indication of wrongdoing. The vast majority are believed to have been on Epstein's island for legitimate business, social or political reasons. New York federal judge Loretta Preska found no legal justification for continuing to withhold the names and ordered the release. The names include Presidents Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, who strenuously deny any wrongdoing. Four of the names released were redacted because they are the name of alleged victims who traveled on Epstein's private jet. So this article lists names that have already been released. I don't think that any of this is new information, but this is just the setup to what is possibly coming down. We're still waiting on the release of information that might come from Pam Bondi's commitment that she made yesterday on Jesse Waters' show. She was talking about what was to be discovered, what she had, what was to be released.
One of the things a lot of people are wondering, because you said last week that you have the Epstein files on your desk, is when can we see them and what's taking so long to release them?
I do. Jesse, there are well over, this will make you sick, 200 victims, 200. So we have well over 250, actually. So we have to make sure that their identity is protected and their personal information. But other than that, I think tomorrow, you know, the personal information of victims. Other than that, I think tomorrow, Jesse, breaking news right now, you're going to see some Epstein information being released by my office.
What kind? Are we going to see who was on the flights? Are we going to see any evidence from what he recorded? Because he had all of his homes wired with recording devices.
Yeah, what you're going to see hopefully tomorrow is a lot of flight logs, a lot of names, a lot of information. But it's pretty sick what that man did.
So there's Pam Bondi, Attorney General. She's got the info. She's got the list. She's got the victim name. She said over 250 victims here, and we are waiting to find out the latest installation. That Newsweek article, a bit of a kind of a catch you upper on what we know up to this point. The details on what is going to come next, she says, are going to be flight logs. So if you listen to the Newsweek article, and I would assume that Jeffrey Epstein, who was a businessman, you know, his entire purpose served wasn't to traffic people to his little St. James Island so they could have sex with minors. But that was certainly a part of it. The question is, who was involved with him to the extent that they were committing crimes? And I would assume there's a lot of people who have lawyered up.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, honestly, to clear your name, if you're in the clear, as much as to defend yourself from whatever might happen next.
Yeah, people have been getting ahead of that, too. I'm looking at the same thing as you are, Annie. I'm looking for official reports on names and stuff. They're just not released yet. There's a lot of talk on Twitter, but we can't report that.
Well, there's a like from the Newsweek article that was posted, there is a list that has been released. It was with that January release that was based on a court case. But that list doesn't indicate that those people have done anything wrong. They just might have been doing business with him, but they also might have been doing extracurriculars with him or through him. The YouTube live chat poll, let's discuss this when we come back. Are conservatives being too insensitive regarding the Doge cuts? People are losing their jobs. They're real humans. They're real people. You might even know somebody. You might even be one of them. Are conservatives not thinking about the humanity around this enough? Vote on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.